Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help women's wear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode. Today, I'm joined by Aditi Sinha of Point of View Label. So welcome to the show, Aditi.
Thank you, Allison. So excited to be here.
Thank you for joining me. For people listening who are meeting you for the first time, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. My name is Aditi. I am the founder of Point of View Label. We're a functional yet designer workwear brand for women, and we're on a mission to end pockets inequality.
That's such a fun, like, I'm already interested with, you know, who doesn't love pockets, right? Yeah, so your brand, I know, is workwear. So I want to start off and ask, what is your point of view on workwear for the modern women?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I think the genesis of why we wanted our brand to sort of start with the workwear space is because I was reading a research one day, and it said that, you know, women are often judged on their experience. And that judgment actually has significant impact on what the bottom line for them looks like. So, you know, your earning potential and whatnot. And I felt like this is a great place to start to make women feel like they're both confident and competent in something that, you know, that they wear. And of course, mm-hmm. I've been an alum of the corporate world for about 15 odd years with big tech and with, startups even. And I realized that while we go to work every day, we were not excited by our work closets. When I would open my closet every day to get dressed for work, I often felt this, you know, dreary, boring feeling come over me. And, I was never excited to wear something for work. Given that so much of our time and energy is spent at work, I felt like the wardrobe should be ready to take all that on. And so, you know, bringing all of this together is why we zeroed in on the workwear space and decided to create purposeful workwear that, you know, not only made women feel, you know, great about wearing them, but also made them ready to take on all kinds of things that we do at work, whether it is challenges or opportunities or whatnot.
Yeah, so it sounds like it was kind of a two-part idea, one being the confidence of the women themselves, and two, being able to present a really professional, strong appearance at work so that they could, so it's like one is like the internal, how they feel, and the other is like how other people perceive them, it seems like.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, both of these together make the whole of what your work persona is. How do you get mm-hmm. ready for work? In fact, little nuances, like, especially for pockets, you know, why pockets matter the most at workwear, sort of it dawned on me when I realized that, you know, when we were sitting in meetings and all of that, and often people would just get up and, you know, men would go from a meeting to lunch and the conversation would continue while women would get up from the meeting, go back to their desks and whatever else, and, you know, have this intermittent pause that paused the conversation. So I wanted to remove this barrier of a pause, of unnatural breaks in conversation, and have them be independent and, you know, free to go from a meeting to wherever they wanted, because all they needed was probably their wallets and their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we didn't need that kind of an unnatural pause. It's just something that is a minor inconvenience, but a very big impact on how continuity of conversation and, you know, those kind of things help women in the workplace. So yeah, it's both actually. You've hit the nail on its head. It is both how you feel internally and how you're able to present yourself externally that goes down into, your perception and your confidence.
Yeah, and I had never thought about that before, but you're so right that with that scenario of you're in a meeting, the men all get up and just head out the door, and the women go back and grab their purse and grab their, phone and grab whatever because they didn't have it on them what they needed. And yeah,
Absolutely.
that it's not only inconvenience, but like you said, it's that breaking conversation where the women are then like missing out on the continuity of like furthering the project or their career, whatever they're wanting to do, in that meeting. And yeah, that's really powerful. I had not like thought of that scenario, but now that you say it, it's so true.
Yeah, it's these little small but systemic things that that go unnoticed and kind of seem trivial at the get-go, but it really isn't. It really is more about equality than anything else, and which is why we've chosen the phrase "end pockets inequality" to sort of talk about the movement that POV is starting.
I love that.
Thank you.
So why is this perspective important to you personally?
It's very personal to me. It's a personal cause. Pockets are something that I believe strongly in because I believe in equality. And I had a very interesting experience that actually launched our startup. One of these days, when I was still working for Big Tech, a really senior colleague had got her 2-year-old son to work, and it was one of those bring your kids day or something like that. As she went from really big meeting to one really big meeting to another, she would keep her phone in her son's pocket. He was 2 years old and he had six pockets. One of those cargo pants that have two pockets and then two back pockets and two cargo pockets. I don't know what they are called, but he had six pockets. And so it just like really hit home to me as to what have we done to deserve this amazing inequality. Why are women not, I don't know, deserving of a pocket? I couldn't understand that, and it really, really started to haunt me. Also, I personally believe that this is the age of pockets because, frankly, all you need to step out of the house is your phone. My phone is my car key, my phone is my wallet, my phone has everything that I need to ask for help or to get in touch or whatever else. So if I really needed to step out of the house and be like really free and independent, all I need is a phone, and not having a pocket to house that phone in this day and age just felt like a handicap. It's just one of those things that bothers me personally, and I would have loved it if it were a solved problem and not such a luxury. But since it wasn't, I thought we'll do something about it. And, I'll at least make a beginning, get the conversation started.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of pockets as well, and I definitely plan outfits around like, okay, what am I going to do today? How much pocket space will I need? So it's like, I can't wear that dress, doesn't have enough pockets. I'll wear this and, these pants instead or whatever.
Exactly. All of these back of the mind calculations and things that, that shouldn't be an issue at all are guiding our choices every day and making us wear one thing versus the other. I think all garments in your cupboard should be available to you every single day, right? And so it should not be dependent on how you're feeling, whether bloated or what you want to do during the day or whatever. I mean, it should just be a matter of choice to pick out whatever, your vibe is that day.
So I'm curious, like it sounds like the brand started with kind of a lot of questions in terms of, why is there this pocket inequality? Why aren't pockets included in workwear? Why is there this difference? Have you been able to like have you found answers to any of those things? Not that there necessarily is one answer and what you've created is kind of an answer, but like how has your understanding of these issues changed or evolved since starting this brand?
I think it's a process of discovery. It's understanding what the zeitgeist is, and also at the same time reading up and researching on what the history actually is on some of these things. Actually, so if you really go back in time, you will realize that both men and women had what is called external pouches, and they would keep all their money and stuff and whatever else. And then through the years, through generations, men and women's roles changed in the society. So men would go out and, work, and hence the need for either concealed or outer pockets where they could keep stuff that they needed outside of the home. And traditionally, the woman's role started to be more and more at home, and where they actually didn't need to sort of have things on their person because it was always within reach, within their homes. As we started on this journey, we realized that, women's roles have changed, and we've come a really long way from being at home or homemakers, and we do the exact same thing that any, man or woman does. Go out and be out in the world and do our stuff. And so those differences started to make absolutely no sense in the current present times. So we went back and tried to understand why do these archaic differences still exist, and a lot of reasons, not justifications, but reasons, kind of came up. Like, for instance, this whole societal thought about women prioritizing appearances, or the society of prioritizing appearances for them, had this focus on having these perfect silhouettes for women and not spoiling with a bulge. So I did a bunch of research against that, and frankly, while there is obviously the focus on looking great, because women have the privilege of looking great and whatever they wear, this unhealthy obsession with not having a pocket because there will be an ugly bulge is not something that a lot of women shared. Women actually preferred to be, more purposeful and more independent with pockets than without them. So, there's this perception of prioritizing women's appearances, but I think it's kind of losing ground, and it's not an either or really, especially with point of view. As we were researching where to place these pockets, we realized that, there were, let's say, the front of the thigh, there is a gap where we could place the pockets, and the phone actually doesn't show, it kind of disappears in your pocket. And so the pocket is a solution that helps women still look and feel their best with, with their beautiful silhouettes, and keeps them practical too. There's so much that has changed ever since we started working on this. We started with limited understanding and, and research, and through the journey, we've learned so much more from our customers. Every customer that talks to us gives us a new perspective, a new feedback on why they need pockets and what kind of pockets they need. And then I think the best part is everyone I know, oh my God, Allison, everyone I know, everyone on our Instagram following and, where not, actually sends us a lot of memes that are pocket related. I should totally build a repository of these memes. And I was really surprised to see some of those. I don't know the truth in this, so I'm not going to, write it in blood. But even dogmatic, superstitious things like women were not allowed to have pockets because, so that they couldn't hide witchcraft things in those. I know it sounds so ridiculous. And yet, no one has challenged it. No one has actually challenged that proposition to say, you know what, we don't believe in all this. Here are your pockets, whatever else. So yeah, it's a process of learning. It is continuous growth. It's important to understand where it came from, and then also to see what is the loss in relevance in that reasoning in current times to actually address this issue systemically.
Yeah, I really admire how you've done all this research and really dove into it because, yeah, it is. Pockets seem like such a simple thing, right? You just add a little like extra bag of fabric in there, but there's so much that
Yes.
goes into this, like you said, like the where do you place the pocket, how large the pocket is, like do and with multiple of the brands I've worked with, we've done polls and had various customer feedback of pocket or no pocket because they don't like the outline of the pocket, or the, if they want added bulk at their hips because if you put stuff in the pocket and it's in the side. And so there's all this nuance to just a simple pocket, but yeah, it sounds like you've really taken a very, challenge the assumptions, challenge the kind of conventional, oh, women don't want pockets because of this, or women, shouldn't have pockets because, this reason or the other, but you've kind of challenged that and really looked at, okay, what do the women want in today's world?
Absolutely.
And it's pockets.
In fact, before we started the brand, we did a lot of primary research. I spoke to about 200 women and then did secondary research through a survey of, close to 1,000 women. And we realized that the top two things that women actually wanted, one of those was pockets. So one of those questions that I used to ask them is, if there were no constraints, what do you miss in your workwear, or what would you want to have in your workwear? And we got a bunch of varied answers, but I think the consistent one was pocket. There were other things like fit and, fabric and, a lot of other things, but pockets showed up more consistently than anything else. So clearly there was a very, very strong and vocal demand for pockets in the minds of women. And I'm sure you will resonate with it too, because I totally do it. Anyone who gives me a compliment on a dress and it has pockets, I cannot not point it out. I'm like, thanks, it has
You're like,
pockets.
thanks, it has pockets.
I should we should make a t-shirt out of this.
I'm sure somebody has.
I'm sure, yeah.
Even the, like I was saying, I made a dress this weekend and it has pockets, and I spent a lot of time like putting, because it has a welt pocket with a pocket flap, so it's like
Lovely.
placing the pocket because it's visually that's part of the design, but then like the size of the pocket and the angle of the pocket, and I was like, it has to fit my whole phone in there and not look like that I have my phone in there, and then like a second pocket for business card size, that's handy. And yeah, it's there's so much detail that goes into it, but yeah, the first thing I did, I like sent it to a picture to some of my friends, and it was like, and I said, here's the dress, and yes, the pockets are functional and large. You have to point it out when there are pockets.
It's a moment of pride. In fact, someone took this a little bit a little distance, and how we always say thanks, it has pockets. I read a meme that said, if the woman does not reply with thanks, it has pockets, she's a spy.
Because he's hiding something. Too funny.
Anyway.
Yeah, so you mentioned we talking about the brand. I know you have a co-founder as well, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. She's the backbone of POV. This is Sakina. She's my friend and co-founder. She's a tech leader at Amazon and handles everything from our website technology to finance and we share operations.
Nice. Yeah, I was gonna ask, like, what are your roles in the business? So she does more of the finance and tech side, and then
Right.
you share operations, and then what kind of are the pieces of the brand that you're responsible for?
Yeah, so I think we've split it according to our strengths. Sakina is a very well organized, thoughtful, articulate person, and obviously she's a tech leader, so she's great with, understanding technology, making it more accessible, more intuitive for our customers. So she takes care of, everything to do with website, how we present stuff on our website, capabilities that we would like to bring to our customer. But, she's the brain of the company, and so she handles finances. And then, we split operations. I take the supply chain part of the process, and she handles the customer delivery and warehousing and all of that. Other than that, I am the creative head of Point of View as well. So along with my designer, I work on collections, on the brand, on marketing, on partnerships, on every other residual part of the business. And of course, I take care to oversee everything that's going on.
Yes, yeah, so cool. You like split it according to their strengths and share the things that you both do well. It sounds like that's a great balanced team there between the two of you.
Absolutely. Couldn't have asked for a better partner.
How did you two meet? Like, it sounds like, did you work together? You knew each other like before starting this brand?
We knew each other. We were friends before we started the brand. We actually met at a dance class.
Oh,
So
wow.
yeah, we
What kind of dance?
I teach Latin at a Bollywood studio, and both of us
Okay.
dance at a few different forms. I don't know which exact class we met at, but we've been dancing together a while, and it's a really interesting story actually how we decided to start working together. We
Yeah.
were talking about doing our own thing back in 2022 November, and I was talking about how I really wanted to do something in this space with pockets, with workwear. Da, da, da. And she had totally resonated with all of these thoughts and the mission and all of that. And at that point, we had absolutely no plans of, or no decided date of when we will go into this full time or launch this or whatever else. Come 2023, on January 1st, the first message I received was not a Happy New Year message, but a message from Sakina, who said that if you ever decide to do this, I'm with you. And that gave me a lot of strength and confidence to say, you know what? Between the two of us, I think we will be able to make something of this. And so, we formed a partnership, and I brought her up to speed on where we were with the thought and the ideation, and then started to work on Point of View.
That's such a fun story, and I love it how you met at a dance class. That's so cool.
It just made sure that we were both creative souls, and we knew that we had things in common.
Yeah, that's so helpful where you have, I mean, a little bit cliche, but you have the same point of view on things.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned you also work with a designer. Like, who else other than you and Sakina are kind of like on the team that creates POV?
We have a very small, nimble team, and we work a lot with people who handle projects for us. So on a full-time basis, we basically are four or five people. Of course, there's I mean, I'm full-time on this. Everyone else has part of the project. So there's me and Sakina. We have a designer who's been with us since the inception. She's helped bring the debut collection on to life, and she's a very, very integral part of Point of View. She is also working on our current collection, and she brings a very strong both aesthetic and technical skill to the table. She used to have her own brand. Her name is Karishma Christina Singh. She used to own a brand, and now she works for another brand in India. But she's the lead voice on our designs and on our collections. I work very, very closely with her to sort of bring the vision to life, and she obviously takes care to cross all the T's and dot all the I's and make sure that we're production ready and all of that with her vision as well. And then we have a couple of project managers that actually help with the production process. The production process is a very arduous, very detail-oriented thing to see. So someone works with the manufacturers to ensure that the timelines are met, that the quality is checked, and everything is on track for launches, for the customer, and everything else. So we have a couple of project managers back in India that also sort of work with us. And then, of course, everyone else is a freelancer or on project by project basis. That's a rotating roster.
Nice. So it sounds like maybe like, are you and Sakina both in the Seattle area, and then is everyone else your production and the product managers are in India, and then kind of everyone else spread out, sounds like.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I think it's so fun how, you know, in the world we live in today, you can kind of have a global brand like this and work with talent kind of wherever in the globe that's really the best fit for your brand. You don't have to like only work with somebody, you know, right next door to you in the same city. It makes it like opens up way more possibilities.
Absolutely. And I mean, much as the world has changed since COVID, I think this is a really good legacy that, no one is now limited by the geography that they live in. Whether in terms of opportunities or how you mentioned in terms of talent availability, the world is your oyster. So wherever there is best match, I think it's a blessing to the world now that people have started to accept it more openly, and it's been proven that productivity doesn't really go down if you're not in person.
Yeah, I totally agree. So with your debut collection, I feel like it's a decent sized collection. You have like, I don't know, eight dresses or so and a couple pants and
Yes.
blazers and tops. What was it like putting all those pieces together and kind of designing that initial collection?
Oh my God, it was amazing. I have to give credit to our designer, because when we started, we wanted to make sure that it is a full wardrobe solution for our customers. So you're right, we had eight dresses, five tops, three trousers, three blazers, and two skirts, so that we cover all sorts of and all varieties of things that women can wear to their workplace. Excuse me, wear to their workplace. The journey was a lot of iterations. It was a lot of back and forth and a lot of evolution. We started off with, being in different directions, but through the process of development, we realized that we wanted the collection to be a tight representation and a cohesive, form of what we set out to achieve. So we narrowed down our priorities of what we could achieve in the first collection and what were most important. So pockets obviously made the cut. We, except for the tops, we had pockets in everything, including jackets. And then we wanted to have enough experiments with things that were functional for women and that women had been doing as hacks for a long period. Very little things like, when you wear a shirt and there's a gap near your bust, keeping an internal button that buttons the other way to make sure that that gap is, covered or it doesn't gape or whatever else. So we wanted to try that out as part of a design. Of course, introducing bra strap holders in every dress so that we're not constantly living in fear of whether our bra strap is showing in a formal meeting was important to us. So I think there were various kinds of things that converged in our collection. Of course, the design aesthetic was the first thing we started with. The fact that we wanted to exude both power and feminist, feminine take on workwear was our starting point. So what brought those two things together and did not make our clothes also look borrowed from the boys was important to us. So we started with the mood board, and we started to pick out feminine elements that we could incorporate in our in our workwear while still keeping the aura of power and confidence intact. So that whole mood board was the first thing that we started with. And then, of course, came the colors. We wanted to introduce feminine colors and bright colors in the palette so that, this whole sea of gray, beige, black, and blues in the corporate world is a little bit challenged. So we introduced pinks and light blues, in the collection, just to test the waters and see how women will, embrace that and feel about it. And then, like I said, and then we turned to priorities of functional elements that we really wanted to test out and to offer, including pockets, bra strap holders. We started doing elasticated waistbands in pants, but in a way that does not make them look like pajamas. So, the whole band is not elasticated, but there is a small segment at the back of the pants that is, so that it still gives you breathing room, and it has about 2 inches of give, so that you can go through your day and have a hearty meal if you felt like. So, it was just getting all of these pieces together, iterating through it, and make sure that the end result is something that that sort of presents the point of view of our brand very, very succinctly and in a clear manner to our customers.
I think you did a really good job with that because, like, looking at the collection, even arguably a larger size collection than a lot of startups, begin with, but it seems very cohesive and you definitely, you can tell you have a point of view. It's sharp, it's clean, but it's not like it's still very feminine too and functional. So I can definitely see the hard work that went into kind of curating this collection. And it's not easy to do. I feel like getting down to being succinct with in general with words or with design is more difficult than just kind of being all over the place with lots of ideas. It sounds like you really curated the best and most effective ones for what you wanted to communicate.
Thank you. Means a lot coming from you. And just to add to what you said, I think you're right. I don't know who to attribute this quote to, but apparently, good design is when you can't take anything else away, not when you can add something more. I really, really like that quote. It's probably not worded this way, but you should check that quote out.
Yeah, it essentially the most minimal simple it can be without losing its function.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm curious though, so what were some of the ideas or like things that you wanted to do in the beginning that you started off with, but then you kind of nixed and didn't go forward with?
way too many to count. I think when you start, the world is your oyster, and you want to sort of run to the moon and back and do so many things. I felt like we didn't discard any ideas so much as deprioritize them. I think all of those were really great ideas to begin with. We will, actually, we hope that we will get to it at some point in the future. So I wouldn't put any ideas in the next bucket yet. In the coming soon bucket. I would love to do more for maternity functional workwear, more for like larger sizes and fringe sizes. I think those are things that we would love to tackle at some point in the POV journey.
Yeah, those are all great things, but yeah, some of the ideas it's like best for another piece or another collection and in order to keep that really tight focus within each collection that you do.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I mean, I don't think I can think of any examples at the point, but yeah, some things are better suited for some collections and styles than the other one. I think the example that comes to mind is we want to do adjustable length pants, and we did end up doing an adjustable length pant for the cigarette silhouette, like a pencil pant. We were trying to find a way to also do it for straight or flared pants, and we tried a bunch of things, but we felt like it's more important for us to get some feedback on how people actually or women actually perceive the need for adjustable length in in flared pants or in straighter pants. We had enough interest for pencil pants, so we went ahead with that and kind of parked the idea for the other silhouettes.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I'm just like thinking about this too of the need. And I guess you could see a need where it's like, okay, I want to wear flats with it one day and heels with it a different day, so you would need to adjust it. But like other than that, I off the top of my head, not having done specific research on this, but to test this, but I feel like the bigger need with pants is not so much the ability to adjust them, but the ability to get them in different lengths. You know, it's like somebody who's 5 foot versus 5'8", they
Correct.
don't need to adjust it down to the 5'8" length. They just need it shorter to begin with, or vice versa, you know. So,
That's a good point. Although I do, I did hear a good use case for adjustable length in addition to heels and the flats. I think it was a commuter versus office setting. Especially, in places like New York or other places where people take a lot of public transport. I'm told that women actually carry their shoes in their bags. And so, as they are traveling, they wear sneakers or flats or whatever else, and then they change into something more, elevated as they reach work. That seemed like a really good use case for adjustable length pants, even with the same height. But of course, what you said is such a big pain point, and it goes back to my aspiration of doing something for friend sizes. I'm a petite woman, and I totally resonate with what you said.
Yeah, that's a great point too. The commuter difference of switching shoes. I'm also petite, so that's the pant the well really just lengths of anything is what I run into. So throughout designing this collection, I know you did a lot of kind of research, testing ideas and talking to women and surveying before starting the brand. Did you do anything kind of like while you were developing this debut collection in order to ensure that each p piece really fits your vision and the goals?
Well, we did a bunch of fit sessions. So as we did our sampling exercise, we realized that we wanted to make sure it fits different body types and, the same kind of silhouettes. One of the things that we did was for a few styles where we were able to, we made the same dress in three different sizes and picked out very different body types to see how they felt about, the fit, fall, fabric, everything else. Because it's easy to default to either your own size or your own body type and over-index on that, but we wanted to be as inclusive as possible. It's a really difficult thing to do because all bodies are different, and by no means would I like to claim that we've been able to serve every body type. But the intention is to learn more and more about what makes different kind of fits appealing to different body types and continue to evolve through our design process, through our production, or even fits to make sure we're serving the broadest segments of of women with different body types. That's what we did for our debut collection, and we're going to be continue to build on testing on different women of different body types and different expectations of comfort, and then iterate based on that.
I love it. So, how have you kind of kept track of all this research? I imagine by this point that you have, so much data and you've had all these conversations. How are you, just on the practical side, how are you collecting all of this and organizing it so that it's actually a useful resource to refer back to as you're continuing to develop new pieces for the brand?
Oh my God. This is such a relevant question for a scatterhead or a creative brain like me. When you start, when you're a creative brain, you get all of these ideas, and I send myself messages in the middle of the night when I get up and I have an idea in the dream. I send myself messages and voice notes and whatnot. But I soon realized that these messages are not going to be, something that I can refer back to because they're in all different places and whatnot. So now we've started this really disciplined exercise of tracking all of our research, our customer feedback, and our learnings in well drafted notes. So we have a location where we classify it by, customer feedback and add tags to it based on whether it is, for fit or for fabric or just something new, like an innovation or whatever else. And all of that is now being tracked in our repository with proper tags that we can filter out and, go and revisit. What we're also doing is we're attaching priorities to those ideas or potential to those ideas. So we call something high priority, high potential. And if it's to do with a design or a fit, we make sure that we're implementing that in our next collection. So it's process. We're still in the early stages of sort of formalizing how will we keep all of this knowledge base and keep us honest to our research and not make things be sort of pulled out of thin air. But we definitely recognize the importance of organizing all of this knowledge for not only for us, but also for everyone who will join us along the journey.
Yeah, that's huge. I bet that it will come in so in handy once, since you've kind of developed this, operating process for collecting and tagging this information. Because I think that's something that's a real challenge is, and something that I'm always kind of thinking about in my business is like, okay, where do I put this so that I can refer back to it? Like, I've got like paper notes over here and I've got a note on my phone over here and then Trello board for this. And there's like too many places where like I can't like search and find everything that's been said about, XYZ. But having all that data in one place, I'm sure will really help going forward as the brand grows.
Absolutely. And we're getting so much good feedback. Having a place to just formalize it also keeps us committed to to actioning those feedbacks. And so I'm totally overstating this, Allison, but I try to have about 10 or 15 minutes a day to make sure that I have sort of ledgered everything I learned during the day. Some days it does happen. Some days I skip it. But the aim going forward is to make sure that those 15 minutes of ledgering all the learnings and adding the right tags so that it becomes searchable, through the journey is something that I commit myself to.
That's a wonderful goal, and I'll have to follow up with you later and see how it's going, 'cause yeah, it's I have some of those. Like my goal is I send every weekday a little email to my newsletter list, like a tip or something. And so every single day I have to write something. And so that's my okay, what am I gonna write about today? What am I gonna share that's helpful to the people on my list? And so that's my daily thing that is my goal to put together. But yeah, sometimes things get in the way, but that's my goal.
I should totally sign up for this mailing list.
Oh yeah, I'll send you the link after this.
Love it.
Awesome. So with all this data, is there ever a time where you get, and I'm sure there probably is, like conflicting feedback on things? And if so, how do you decide like what feedback to implement, and which is, a distraction or not something that, is a priority to focus on for your brand?
Yeah, as you rightly said, there is often conflicting feedback or personal preference-led feedback, and sometimes it becomes really difficult to, segregate the two. Every customer is important to us, and so every customer's feedback also matters. The hard thing is to pick how do we consolidate all of that feedback so we still maintain the nuances. And not, aggregate in a way where we lose the meaning of things. And I think we still have to sort of really crack the code on this. But one of the things that we do as we've started to receive a bunch of these feedback and notes is go back to how it resonates with with the DNA of POV. Because both Sakina and I are from Amazon, we totally believe in the writing culture. When we started POV, we also wrote what is called a PR FAQ, which is the, which is how Amazon operates. Any new project, you write out what that project will be, what is the scope, what will customers say about it, and all kinds of FAQs around it. And then that's your project plan. That's the goal doc. So we wrote out what is, what are the tenets of our, product development.
Yeah. And what are those, may I ask?
Of course. The fact that we want it to be feminine, still powerful, versatile so that it can go from work to wine, comfortable but purposeful. And then, the last one is we will continue to learn and innovate for, for adding more functionality. So we wanted to, we wanted to have simple tenets to begin with, and they're open to evolution. They're open to sort of, reinvention. But at this point, we vet every feedback, which is, which is sort of sent our way. With these tenets. So if we get a little bit of feedback on, let's say, something being a little too feminine, we accept it and we try and make sure that we have enough of a spread within our collection to serve the needs of those who don't want to be overly feminine with bows and peplums and whatnot, but to entirely do away with elements that are an ode to femininity is never going to be, POV's style. And so, we try and vet feedback with respect to our tenets. The other thing, like I mentioned, is functional but purposeful. We spoke a little bit about this when we were talking about, elements that make POV functional. For pants, for instance, if we make it absolutely, like PJs, they're super functional with pockets. But we also want it to look purposeful. And so, if your purpose during the day is to look confident, look professional, then PJs don't really serve that purpose. And so, when we get feedback about making pants more, more casual, more open, that's something that we believe that, POV is not the right place to serve. Right? How do we sort of go down to the pain point that our pants are causing? If people want it to be more comfortable, then we try and alter the silhouette or try and play with the, fabric to sort of address those concerns. But, we try and be true to what the DNA and the tenets of POV are.
Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see how you're really like fitting that feedback in different ways. And I think like your approach to that really brought up a great point in terms of there are some designs where like if let's say you're just kind of taking feedback across the board, like averaging out, not necessarily to say that you're having people rank like 1 to 5 stars, but like say if you were, you could look at something and say, okay, which designs or which pieces have on average the highest ranking.
Right.
That's one set of data, but then you could look at it, deeper and say, oh, well, everyone gave it a 3. No one gave it a 5.
Yeah.
Like, so everyone is kind of like so-so about it. They're like, it's good, but it's not amazing. And then one, there may be another piece over here, which, maybe it's the less feminine one or something, where some people gave it a 1 because they hated it and it was like too structured and, not feminine enough. But then there was a good chunk that like all gave it 5s.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing too, where it's like overall, maybe the score or like the feedback is lower on that piece, but that piece received like really high or like really great feedback in one, you know, for one particular customer subset. And so it's still worth keeping it in the line versus having like a bunch of pieces that like everyone thinks is okay. You can have different pieces where it's like, okay, this is really the standout, amazing 10 out of 10 piece for this group, and this is the 10 out of 10 piece for this other group. And incorporate feedback that way when you are kind of tracking and looking at the nuance of that.
Oh, absolutely. You've hit the nail on its head, Alison. In fact, this is a real example for POV. One of our jackets has like a little shoulder frill. And we tried to sell it to one of our B2B partners, and the feedback we received was that it's a little Star Wars-y. It looks like a little bit of a Star Wars costume and all of that. It's like, okay, it's a personal opinion. And it so happened that we had a trunk show at that B2B place, and their customers loved the shoulder frill. It made them feel feminine, but also really, really powerful. And so, we realized that it's just a matter of perspective. Every perspective is important. Like you said, I would love to have some polarized views. I would love to have some customers that truly, truly love a design and are not, like in the golden mean about it, because those are the customers that become your, biggest ambassadors and advocates and the most vocal voices. The risk that anyone runs, and not only POV, that risk that anyone runs is that if some people will love it a lot, there will be a bunch that will either not like it at all or even go so far as to call it, Star Wars, Stars Warry. But it's okay. It's just a matter of perspective. And so long as we're respectful to both of those, I think it's okay.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I did not think of that when I saw that blazer on your site, but yeah, I can maybe see how someone is like, I don't know, that's a little far out for me, but yeah, that's hilarious. And that's also a case of not just like differing opinions, but there's that added layer of the retailer, the B2B person, where they're curating. Like you have to get through their perspective in order to reach their customer most of the time. Like if, somebody's buying wholesale from you, the wholesaler has to like it because they're kind of curating what they think their customer is going to like. And they may not be always right about that, like in this case, their customers loved it. But there's that whole other layer of different perspectives in play there too.
Yeah, but it's all part of the game, right? I mean, their perspective, they also come to the table with so much, knowledge and so much exposure to their customers that it's really important to take their perspective into keep that in mind and learn from it. But sometimes, some.
Yeah, I mean, they are often extremely right,
Yeah, oh yeah.
about their customer.
More often
But
than
yeah,
not.
there's those outliers.
Yeah.
I feel like it's always the designs where it's like, I don't know if I love it or hate it. Like
Yeah.
those are the ones that do well, kind of for that reason. They're kind of polarizing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, and so I totally go by the founder's gut on some of those, and take the risk on it.
So, have you ever faced a difficult decision in regards to kind of following those tenets of point of view label or following your values in this business? And if so, can you share what that was and how you handled it?
Yeah, I mean, every day is a new challenge. One of the things that we want POV to be is, and I like to, I'm a big one for copy and words, being a brand marketer. So in my mind, I'm building POV to be feminine, functional, and fearless. One of the difficult decisions was to decide on how much will we over-index on, on the color aspect of things. So, like I said, we wanted to challenge the status quo of the blue grays and beiges and blacks that rule the corporate world. And we started to incorporate a lot of color in our palette. But as we started to put our debut collection together, we realized that we were probably trying to push the boundaries on a lot of things at the same time. The fact that we were including, frills in all of our designs and, in places where you don't usually see frills or in silhouettes where you don't usually see frills, and then also doing it in pinks and, blues, light blues and pastel blues and all of that was probably too much of a risk, right? And so at the get-go, we decided to take like a slightly more measured approach to test out things one by one. And we kept all the feminine elements. We also kept a few experimental pieces of pink and light blues and all of that, but we offered the choice of being feminine in navy blue and blacks as well, so that at least one of those aspects of professional wear that we've all become accustomed to is still maintained, and people don't have the sense of otherness that sort of needs them to be very, very highly risk-taking every day at work. So we wanted to make POV easy to embrace and easy to accommodate for our customers. And that's when the feedback of making sure that we keep at least one thing constant, consistent with what people are used to, while pushing the boundaries on everything else, that we took in our stead. And while I love colors, we still decided to do some navy blues, and a large part of our collection was in a very beautiful navy blue that that we did. And I do have to thank my co-founder and the designer for sort of taking the call on this as well.
Yeah, it's like you can't push the boundaries all at once. And this it's kind of goes back to what you shared at the very beginning of the interview today of the you want women to feel confident internally, but also be able to portray themselves to, their workplace and how they want to be. And so being able to offer kind of some colored options or some details for the risk takers, but also offer something that makes, somebody who's doesn't necessarily want to stand out in that way at work some options to where they can feel confident and like put together, but not like, out of their comfort zone at work. So, yeah, that's really cool how you incorporated the riskiness, but also the safeness into these pieces.
Right.
So I have one last question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
It is that one person can make a difference. We all of us think about pockets so many times, and we've always wanted pockets, and we've always blamed the whole industry for not giving women pockets and whatnot. But I feel, I believe in the power of one. And it just takes one person, one company, one piece of garment to start making the change that you want to see in the world.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It was a very, very it was a great conversation. It reminded me of so many things that we started off with, and your insights were wonderful.
Yeah, thank you for joining me today. Where can people find out more about you and see your pieces at Point of View online?
We're at www.pointofviewlabel.com. You can also connect with us on Point of View Label on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you name it.
Cool. I'll put links to those in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Aditi. This has been so fun.
Likewise.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.